Yes, this is W2TTT. Tony, thank you very much for honchoing it. Yeah, you knew that I was running a little late. Once a month I have a meeting on this night, and I either get to it or I have a conflict that even takes me out of that due to family needs, but I want to thank everybody. So far I have W2CH, K2AMI, KC2NKU. Tony, are there any other stations that I need to know about, and do any of them have questions or comments?
KC2ORX.
Dr. Robert, will you be adding questions or comments tonight?
Negative, Gord, negative.
Okay. Tony, do you have any other stations that wanted to check in?
Yeah, for mobile stations, and Stuart checked in. Now, Stuart's got a new call. It's November 1 STU. Stuart, November 1 STU. He was mobile and checked in as the first check-in.
Outstanding, Stuart. Okay, very good. All right. Are there any other stations that I have not identified or heard about?
W2JEK, Don, one comment.
Don, I got you. No problem. Let's see. CHNKU, AMI, JEK, ORX. I think I said STU already. Anybody else?
K2EIR, one question and one comment.
Howie, excellent. Welcome aboard. I'll explain what this net's about in a minute, and we'll take a second round of check-ins once we're, once those who are among the cognoscentes finish checking in. So any other Kilo 2s? Let's try it that way. Okay, any other Kilo calls? Okay, any other Whiskey calls? Any other November calls? Okay, any Alpha calls? Okay, we're also accessible via Echolink at Kilo 2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L for Lima. K2FJ-L. That's the access for Echolink. If there are any stations who are checking in by Echolink, that might be instructional and helpful as well. I will attempt to get on Echolink shortly, but I'm in a mobile environment, and I'm more than capable of running the net that way, but not to monitor the Echolink. So if there are stations interested in the Echolink, be patient. Okay, the purpose of this net, let me drop it. The purpose of this net is to meet once weekly. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association runs a technical net. It's a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computing, telecommunications, all sorts of wonderful things related to the amateur radio art, how we operate, how we play, how we work, how we serve others. So pretty much you can talk about anything you'd like in life and society as long as you kind of tie it into one of those underlying elements of technology. You can also talk about space weather, radio propagation, all sorts of other things. There's a whole raft of things. So the net is open to anybody who's licensed to operate in the 2-meter band in the United States. You do not need to be a Barra member to participate. And I'm going to challenge you to check in even if you don't have a question or a comment, because we might want to ask you a question or comment, or at least frame the answers that are out there to the questions that are given, the topics that are raised, such that you might have a more enjoyable experience in listening to the net. So it's kind of important to know you're there. It's kind of hard to address your needs if we don't know. So with that admonition in place, are there any additional check-ins? Please call K2BARW2TTT. Okie dokie. Alrighty. Well, I'm going to just do one quick shout-out real quick to make sure I didn't miss somebody who's known to be out here a lot. Is N2OEL around tonight? He's probably foot-dragging, and he didn't do it well enough to did not get a call just before 9 o'clock, so he's probably still working. All right, let's do this. We have comments from Don and comments and questions from Howie, And I've got a couple other things too. So let's begin. W2JEK, Don. It's K2BAR, W2TTT. Your ball.
Okay, K2BAR in the net. This is W2JEK. Good evening, everybody. Just remind everybody that the next Barotest session we'll be having is on the 15th of June. That's a Friday night, week from tomorrow night. And that'll be at 7 o'clock at the Westwood Regional High School, classroom number 123. So hope to see people there that are looking for a license or an upgrade. And keep in mind that the question pool for the extra class licenses will be changing as of July 1st, so if you what you're studying now it will become obsolete at that time. You have to start in with a new question pool. So with that, back to that. W2JEK.
Yeah, that's right. The extra pool is changing at the end of the month of June, so as they said in Latin class, tempest fugit, diamond flying. So, any comments for Don? Okay, I do know that Rachel's been running a course for extra candidates, and I don't know where she is in that life cycle, but I know it's moving along. Robert, you might actually know, because I think you were telling me about KC2BRY studying, Jim was studying for it, so maybe you're able to shed some light on that. KC2RX, K2BAR.
Yeah, KC2BAR, KC2RX. All I know is that KC2VRY needs a swift you-know-what, the you-know-what to have him pass before the 28th of June, Gordon. I've just been going over there, you know, a couple nights, Friday night, I'm going over to get my hand again to study. And I'd really like to see him pass, honestly, before everything changes. But in relation to the class, I hear it's running well, and so far so good from what I've heard.
W2JEK.
Mr. Don, go ahead. Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, Rachel has asked me to run a test session on the 28th. I still have to finalize some of the details on that, but there will be a test session for the class over at that location, and I have to get some details straightened out about it, but there will be an announcement in the near future. About that. Back to that, W2JK.
Okay, that's just to clarify, next week's test session is at Westwood High School in Washington Township. The one on the 28th will be at a different location, correct? We don't need to announce all the details, but it'll be at a different location, correct?
That is correct.
I didn't want to say what it is, I don't want to introduce confusion, but a week from tomorrow, Westwood High School, 7 o'clock, good to go, but there will be another Barrow Run test session later in the month. And Don, if you know people are coming for other classes of license, they're welcome to come to that session as well, correct?
Yes, it is. We'll take them. I don't know how many will be coming. I know how many she has in her class, but because this has to be publicly announced, we're better to deal with it. You're going to probably expect more people coming. So that's part of my arrangements that I have to make. Back on that.
That's outstanding. You and your team just do a fantastic job with that. So that's great. Alrighty. Thank you. Anybody else have questions, comments about license examinations and the like? Please call K2BAR. Okie dokie. Well, amazing what two cups of coffee and a donut can do to somebody. I'm like hyper-wired compared to the way I was 2 hours ago. Well, I suppose that a stimulating meeting was interesting. Anyway, alrighty. One other point to Robert about preparing Jim. He's got to do two things. He's got to take sample tests. He can either use Ham Test Online or he can use the QRZ test if he's, you know, not wanting to spend the budget. But Ham Test Online is a very good way because it also drills you on the questions that you're struggling with, whereas the QRZ just takes the next question arrangement, you know, the next random sample of questions to comprise a test or an exam, and you test yourself. But I think it's important that he do that in addition to whatever other mentoring you're doing and whatever other reading he's doing. I think that's something to consider. There's something about the magic of taking the test that help you kind of frame things. So do pass that along, Robert. Alrighty, anybody else on the subject of testing? Alright, Don, did you have any closing remarks?
Nothing else, thanks. Thank you, Gordon. Back to that, W2JK.
Yes, and thank you for doing that, too. Yeah, one of the things that is somewhat unsung is that Don has taken on this with a fantastic team of examiners but really under his guidance and leadership. And, you know, we talk about the 8 or 10 or the 10 or 12 official BARA test sessions in the year, but then there's the special ones, the ones he does for our Boy Scout troop, which, you know, are always a mixed bag, to say the least. And then the ones he does for the courses like the one Rachel's doing. I mean, it's just, you know, phenomenal how that works. So it really is something commendable, Don. It really is. Alrighty. Let's see. Our next... before we go on, let me just take additional check-ins. Are there any other check-ins for the net? Please call KTBAR.
Thanks, William.
Outstanding. Noel, will you be giving us questions or comments tonight?
Not more than 5 questions.
Aye, aye, Capitan. All right, we can do that. All right, we'll get you after Howie. Are there any other check-ins? Okay, with that, nothing heard. Let's move on. K2EIR, Mr. Howie, your comment first, and then we'll get on to your question if we close that topic. K2EIR.
Here's K2EIR. Well, my comment is if Stoyan shows up tonight, I'd like to know about it. Because right now I'm using an indoor antenna, and if Stoyan shows up, I know he, from an email that he's put up, a diamond dual band antenna, presumably one with gain, and I would go to the trouble of assembling my 5/8 wave mobile antenna out on the porch and elevating it, which is the best I can do here, to see if we can work direct or listen to him on the input. So that's the comment. Let me know if you're ready for the question. K2EIR.
Just one point, you know, you're kind of flying north, and he's in the shadow of the Palisades. He's on the side of the Palisades. It's kind of low here in northern Bergen County, so but he's literally slammed on the side of it, just a low part of the rise of the west side of the Palisades. Yeah, it's not an easy location to talk out of, but he's either going to be in a sweet spot or he's going to be in a hole, so that would be excellent to see if he could communicate with you on direct. That would be excellent. But I have not heard him at this time. All right. But I do want to make one other comment, and that is, you know, you guys would be amazed how much fun you can have on Simplex. Especially if you have an outside antenna and a few watts, just tune around on the Simplex frequencies and see what you find and start talking with people. It's rather impressive as to how far you can go. And I think a lot of people have forgotten how to do that. And I think it's something that worth pursuing. At this time of year, every so often when the weather front comes through, you find yourself walking really, really far too. It's kind of neat. Something to think about as well. Alrighty. I'll toss it to back to you, Howie, for your question. K2EIR, K2BAR, W2TTT.
Here's K2EIR. Well, I have to comment on your comment. I'll try to make it much briefer than I would ordinarily do, but I think I qualify now for the ham term old man. And back in the 1960s, I used to operate 2 meters, and in those days it was AM, and I was lucky enough to have a fairly high location in an apartment building, and a 2-meter beam, a Yagi, and I built a home built transmitter running 15 watts input, so that would be about 7 or 8 watts output, and with that beam I worked 11 states. Actually, I started with less power and a smaller beam. So yes, if you can work 11 states, and that was from the Bronx, yes, there's a lot on 2 meters. So anyone who hasn't lived through it doesn't believe it. It's there. And there are many people who do a lot more than that, especially if they use modes like media scatter. So that's my comment to your comment. Let me let this reset.
Hold on, Howie.
Roger.
All right, this is a really bad joke, but do you know why your signal went so far?
Let me say no.
Because even your signal wanted to get out of the Bronx.
Okay. Well, temperature inversions had a lot to do with it. Okay. Are you ready for my question?
Absolutely. My pardons to my good friends in the Bronx, WTOTTT.
Okay. Well, I'll comment on the Bronx, too. I was in the Bronx today, and the Bronx is coming back. So that's my comment. Anyway, my question is, does anyone have experience with corner reflectors here on 2 meters or a little bit higher? And the rationale for this is almost everyone today uses a vertical, and not just a vertical, not a vertical beam, but a vertical omnidirectional antenna, you know, and it may be a collinear, it may have gain, but it's a single stick. And one of the people who used this repeater had moved to a fringe area for the repeater. He's out about 50 miles, and the signal is noisy. And I started telling him, well, if he could lower his feed line loss, he could get a Yagi, and so forth. And then I hit upon a notion, and that is he could use a corner reflector with his existing stick antenna, which I think is a collinear. So I'm used to corner reflectors with dipoles, and I don't know how it would work. I'm sure it would have some effect if you built a corner reflector for one of these collinear sticks. It made it a little longer than the stick, so that's what I'm kind of wondering. If you made it a little longer than the stick and put it back, quarter wavelength to a half wavelength, when you would really get some forward gain from the thing. I'm sure you'd get some front to back ratio. Someone I mentioned this to said, well, the collinear is a phased antenna, really, and so it's a very complicated thing with the phasing. But I'm interested in other people's thoughts about that. Back to that control, W2TTT from K2EIR.
Okay. Yeah, actually, I have some experience with it. So a traditional corner reflector is either a single half-wave dipole in a corner, and it could be a 90-degree corner, it could be a 120-degree corner, it could be any number of things, depending on how sharp you want on lobes and how much gain you want, etc. The other thing you can do is set it up as a parabola. So, you know, with that in mind, you can model a couple of different things, but what's nice about the corner reflector is it's a degenerate form of the parabola. So you get some of the characteristics of a parabolic reflector, but not quite as clean a pattern. I've done some experimentation with both corner reflectors way back when and with parabolas more recently, meaning over the last 20 years, and parabolas definitely work better. But the dipole feed in a parabola is not exactly the cleanest feed in the whole world. But it does work. So you've actually raised the spectra to a different level. You said, okay, why don't I take a collinear stick and let's say extend by, let's say, a quarter wave plus or minus the stick, the reflector. That's an interesting idea, especially if it has radials. I really haven't given that much thought, but boy, I guess you could certainly do that. So let me ask this question. What happens if you took, let me drop it, What happens if you took a pair of collinear sticks, inverted them with respect to each other, and phase-fed them with respect to each other, and put them against a common collinear background? You have to invert the signal going to one of them if it's one's upside down with respect to the other. You'd have to flip it. The other thing you could do is you could put them right side up and then use a traditional, what I'll call parallel phasing harness, through, let's say, a Wilkinson power divider or something like that. That would work as well. But I'm really starting to wonder what would happen with the radials. You know, how does that work? Let me go another step further, and let's suggest a J-pole against a corner reflector. That way you kind of clean up that mechanical problem and possibly the radiation pattern. So if you go a quarter wave above and below a J-pole and set it out right, it would be quite interesting on a corner reflector, I would believe. Anybody have comments on this or any of these variants?
I don't know. I was looking at the arrow one at one time.
The arrow is a corner reflector?
Yeah, arrow had a very nice quarter reflector at one time. I don't know if they still do.
Okay. I don't have... What I'm missing in my head here are some samples, radiation patterns to compare to with respect to the angle of the reflector, and also the position vis-a-vis the apex of the reflector, of the feed. Howie, can you shed some light on either the angular relationship or the offset between the apex of the reflector and the driven? What you're seeing?
Well, my problem is I haven't seen this installation. I know it's a Comet GP1 antenna, and the gentleman just moved into a condominium, although I think he's renting his unit, and his antenna is on the balcony. I don't know whether he's on a lower level or higher level. I don't know what his elevation is above ground. Again, his signal into the repeater was very noisy, sometimes dropping out, and I was figuring, hey, if we could get him 4, 5, 6, you know, certainly if he substituted a 7-element Yagi for the stick, I think he'd get enough gain to go probably from noisy to quieting, almost full quieting. But I wanted to make things simple for him. He's already has this investment in that stick. I was saying, well, I was thinking of the corner reflector. I was also thinking that just simply buying some aluminum wire at Home Depot and sticking, if it's stiff enough, stick it through a PVC pipe pole, and it can make the corner reflector very handily, very quickly, or simply make a PVC frame for it. Some of these collinears are not all that long. I don't know how big they are on 2 meters, but they're often dual band, and I think they're not terribly much bigger than a yard or maybe 2 yards long. Another thought I had about mechanically is that you could let the aluminum wires down from a PVC pipe at the top end. But yeah, I don't know the rest. You have all the information I have. So, and I need to research this, what's the right distance for a normal corner reflector. It was just a brainstorm kind of thing, and I'm glad you're playing with the idea, because it is interesting. What can you do cheap that might have some positive effect is where I'm coming from, K2EIR.
Okay. That's very good. The NRL Antenna Handbook, which has been renamed, by the way, it's got a new name, I forget what it's called. It was always a wealth of information for me. Also, the European, the RSGB one actually was always a great source of inspiration as well. Let's just make a couple of comments here. The biggest problem with corner reflectors is this. When they ice up, are you in for a treat? And we tend to use either solids or tight screens. And there's no real reason to use a very tight mesh here on 2 meters. Even on 440, it can be fairly loose. Even on 440, you probably get away with a half inch screen, half inch grid, maybe even larger, without too much trouble. And that will keep down your icing and your wind load. They do have some pretty amazing wind loading characteristics. So do keep that in mind as well. I'm going to suggest people go look at corner reflector, corner reflector antenna on a Google search, and we'll see what we find. I haven't had a chance to do that right up to now, but I will. Corner reflector. Corner reflector design. I'm going to try that just for grins. Maybe we'll get an antenna design out of that. I was going to use the word antenna if it doesn't come up, but that's always a good start, I suppose. These send tend to go. Oh, here we go. Report number 6, corner reflector and the transmitter dipole width. That sounds like our boy. That would be a good start. Yeah, just so corner reflector antenna, corner reflector design. Those are good Google search words for a great set of starting points. I'm just looking here what came up. And very exciting. And gee, they're all written by hands. What a surprise. Or largely, anyway. I have one for 800 megs, and I'd like to compare that to a Yagi. That might be an interesting comparison. So that's something else to think about as well. But I think generically, once you figure out what the offset should be from the apex of the radiator, whether it's a dipole or some other thing like a J-pole, or even the antenna you mentioned, the collinear. I think if you simply start with that and go a quarter wave bigger on either side, that's probably plenty. Critical. It's something that you can probably bring down to within maybe 10 or 15% longer. Without too much trouble, but a quarter wave is probably a safe margin. And, within the mechanical limitations of your space, etc. One other thing I will say this, depending on how wide an apex you have on the reflector, you will tighten or broaden the pattern a little bit. You also clean or clutter the pattern a little bit. And so, if you're looking to make a signal go in a particular direction, you could put this on the leg of a tower and stack them up and down on the leg of a tower to give yourself a broad-facing gain antenna in a particular direction, if that's of interest to you.
Gordon?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Noel.
They don't make the CB-148 anymore, from what I was looking at. It has about 10 dB forward gain. The big deal about it is the off the back is 40 dB rejection off the back. So it would be very useful for somebody who was in a location where he was getting interference from other people at 2 meters. Probably if you were looking for just distance and, in a contest, you probably want a Yagi. They don't make it anymore, but it's got some nice reviews and sorry about that. USZ, I guess it is? Or EHAM?
Well, you can let us know where what the model number is again. We can probably go look it up. Make it model number. What was that again?
CB148 was the main one.
And the manufacturer?
Arrow.
Okay, so it's an Arrow CB148. All right, and that's a good part. And you had something else?
But they did some comments on a couple of the. If you want to work FM, probably go for a 1200 Yagi, which would give you about 6 dB more gain. Great for reducing interference from the rear or the side. But the forward gain is better with the Yagi, is what the consensus seems to be. And they don't make it anymore.
Okay, so let me give you an example of where. In our area, that would be a huge improvement. If you have a high antenna and you want to access the, let's say, the Yonkers 9-1 machine, 146.91, I think it's still the Yonkers or thereabouts, somewhere in Westchester, there's another 9-1 machine down along the shore, but not very far in Tom's River, which, in our, for our purposes, is in theory, far enough away to not interfere. In practice, you're going to hear both repeaters if you're not careful. Some of us who lived on 7-9 know that we hear Vernon and sometimes Pennsylvania. So theoretically, you could put a modest antenna and point it at the target repeater of interest. And as you said, it's got great front-to-back or front-to-side rejection. And that would work great in providing that gain. But the good news is the front of it is pretty is pretty broad, if I remember right. It's not super sharp. It's fairly sharp, but it's not super sharp. So if you have a target area of interest and you need a rejection capability for other directions, this is very, very good antenna to use. Let's see, what else? Well, let's see if there are other people who have some comments.
Who am I?
Good, Tony.
Many years ago, I built a 2-meter corner reflector, and we used it at field day over at the Bergen Community College. The sides looked like bed springs in size. They were like 4x8 squares with wire strung between them. And the driven element was a dipole, and it did have, as you say, excellent corner reflection. It was an experimental thing, and Glenn Alves and I worked on it, and we had a lot of fun with it. It was a monster to put up, because you had these 2 4x8 panels with a corner reflector in the middle, but it worked very good, as you said, for reflecting against in our case, we worried about the 7-9 repeater interfering. Our radios were not that strong, and we wanted to block out 7-9 and try to do some simplex work, and it worked. I have no idea how much better it worked, but it worked. It was again a monster to put up and a monster to build, but a fun antenna to play with.
That's right, and that is the thing. I think once you start doing the math, you're going to find out that these reflectors on 2 meters are not small. But you need not make a tight mesh out of it. You don't need to, you know, drive yourself totally crazy. I, for instance, have a 6-foot grid dish at home, and it hasn't been up on a tower in years. And every so often I think about putting it up. But I want a purpose before I do that, because it's pretty heavy, too. I was looking at the idea of using it at frequencies a little higher than what were originally designed for. So I actually snipped in quarter inch mesh, and painstakingly put that in. It's a nightmare of effort, but I still have it. It's sitting behind the garage. It's not lost in the weeds, and I think if I do put it up, what I probably will do is tack solder some additional aluminum spars into it that are thin, but not actually keep the mesh on because of the wind loading issues. They're just horrendous. It was originally designed for about 900 megs as a grid dish. And 6 feet is a very heavy thing, let me tell you. It's a very, very heavy grid. But, you know, you can put your fist through the grid. It's pretty sloppy. And I would have to decide on my polarization because the grid is only in one direction, which is why I was thinking about, you know, closing the grid in the other direction so I could have dual polarization feeds on the antenna. So I'm going to put such a beast up, I want to get some extra goodies out of it. You know, consider this. Drop it. Consider that corner reflectors, either fixed or rotatable, or parabolas, are all in the same general category. And you know, the nice thing about the corner reflector is that you know you don't have to be a you know you don't have to do odd geometries and things and deal with that problem with a small compromise on pattern and gain. So you know, it's a fair trade-off. Corner reflector basically is the expedited parabola, if you think about it. So anybody else have comments? All right, this is W2TTT. Anybody else? All right, I think we've beaten this topic pretty well to death. Howie, back to you.
Yes, thank you, Gordon. I realize what you said about the dual sticks, you know, in either configuration, one pointed up, one pointed down, etc. Thank you for exploring this here. I didn't expect more, I expected less, so thanks very much. Yes, let's go on to something else. W2TTT, here is K2EIR.
Let me just recap with a couple of ideas. Number one, I think instead of using a traditional, you know, gain omni, I would probably, if I wanted gain in the feed, I would probably use a J-pole, or an extended J-pole even. I think that would be a worthwhile area to pursue. Try it on 440. I think it would probably be easier to model mechanically, number one. You could probably put it on a 10-foot pole and, you know, have something worthwhile to mess with. It's not a nightmare. And then you can decide whether you want to scale it up to the size of a bed spring, like Tony said, for 2 meters. Number two, if you are going to use traditional antennas, and you're going to invert them, or even J-poles, and you're going to invert them with respect to each other, you do have to transpose the center pin on the inverted antenna. You can't just feed them in parallel. Although you can have them both right side up, and then, as I said, use a traditional symmetrical feed, you know, multiples of half electrical half waves coming off of a Wilkinson power divider and you're done. Or if you just want to just be even more expeditious, just equal length of cable period coming off of a Wilkinson power divider. That way they could be both right side up. Very good. I'm glad you brought the subject up. I look forward to hearing if someone's actually going to build one on 440. You got me wanting to run home and try. there's some good opportunities there. Alrighty. Before we go on to Noel's questions, are there any other check-ins for that? Please call K2BAR. Alrighty. Well, let's move on. And I look forward to seeing antennas here. In the near future, some examples. That would be very cool. And to OEL, K2BAR.
Okay, question for today is a question on when you go on eBay and you're trying to convert voltage from one to another. Example, I have a 24-volt scooter, two 12-volt batteries in series. One of the things that I saw was called a buck voltage converter to convert 24 down to 12.8 or 13.68, whatever. And it's adjustable. And then there's other ones that advertise themselves as DC to DC inverters. And the biggest difference seems to be that if you have a buck one, the input voltage has to be higher. Well, the DC to DC one, it pretty much doesn't much matter. They seem to have an input voltage from, you know, 5 volts to 35 volts, but the output voltage could be anything from 3 volts to 30 or something like that. So anyways, I'm trying to figure out how they work. How does the buck one work?
I was afraid you were going to ask that question. Okay. The way they basically work is they take an induced voltage off of, you know, the transformer and use that to, if you will, buck up, hence the phrase, the voltage to the level you want. It's the joys of electromagnetism and voltage boosting with transformers, but I'm not exactly certain of all the principles that are afoot there, because it's not a simple transformer. There's something about it that's different. I'm going to throw it into the wind and hope someone else can be more, you know, helpful here, or not. Okay. I'm sorry, Noel. I know when I don't know an answer, and boy, I get the general concept, but boy, I couldn't explain it very well at all, not competently.
QEIR.
Oh, Howie, you're my savior, hopefully.
No, but maybe an idea. I am unfamiliar with the buck power supplies, but I happen to use here a boost power supply. TG Electronics advertises in QST, and basically he started out with a design that was a QST construction article, but these are meant to take, you know, like 9 to 13 or more volts in, not much more, and give you out 13.6, it's adjustable, mine is putting out 14.4. So the idea is as your battery weakens, you keep the voltage steady, and it does that. And I'm wondering if a boost power supply wouldn't be the thing, technology to use here as well. And even if you don't, maybe the articles in QST on the boost power supply or any handbook might give one an inkling on how it works. K2EIR.
Actually, they work on different principles. God bless Wikipedia. Every so often, when they don't talk about things that are non-technical, well, I have a problem with Wikipedia's, shall we say, non-technical coverage of things. They tend to be more, not in line with my read of history or politics. Having said that, they have if you look at buck-boost transformer in Wikipedia, there's actually a pretty decent treatment of the topic. And basically, it allows you to handle up to as much as 15 to 20% of the power excursion, for lack of a better term, the voltage excursion needed to cover. Now, the way the TGE Electronics and a few of the other boost regulator type technologies work, they basically rectify whatever garbage there is, turn it into AC at a high frequency, at a voltage higher than what you need, or roughly at what you need, and then they produce the voltage you want, and then rectify it and clean it up and ship it out. Now they do, what's really particularly nice about the TGE and others is that they look at the supply voltage and only seek to add the voltage that's missing vis-a-vis the target, so, you know, feed voltage that you want. So if you want 15 volts, let's say, and you start with 12, it's going to add 3 to the 12. As your voltage sags to 11 or 10, it'll add 4 or 5 instead of 3 volts to sum the two. So it puts it through a summing gate, basically, function to give you what you want to hold that steady. So it looks at the input sample and adds to that what you need to get to the target reference voltage. Now, they do that down to a certain point, and you can set that minimal voltage point so as to not either pull too much current or trash your battery if you're operating off a battery. Some people use these things in battery systems. Others use them in places where the regulation on the input side is erratic, and you want to ensure a constant, you know, source voltage for your load. And that's what that's about. They use a lot of electronics, conversions and then re-rectifications and summing to do that. The buck boost transformer methodology does everything on the AC side at whatever frequency you're playing with, usually 60 hertz, and then you just rectify the hell out of whatever you've got and you're good to go. I will say this, the buck boost is not as much a precision device as the switching type. The switching type, you can be accurate out to a couple of decimal places in voltage stability provided to your load. Anybody else have any comments? Everybody's reading the buck-boost transformer write-up on Wikipedia, but it's very good, actually. It's concise. It's got a couple of sub-references that are good, and they even have a thing called a buck-boost converter, which you probably want to look at as well, under the see also's. I think that would be a useful place to go play as a secondary read. All righty. Howie, you have any more?
Nope. K2EIR.
Okay. Noel?
Oh, I got a different one.
Okay, so we're done with this subject?
Different subject.
Excellent. Next subject, then go right ahead.
Okay. Jim Joyce has been looking at these off-fed dipoles. He finally got one that works actually from 40 right on down to 10, maybe even 6, including the 15 meter band by using a slightly different offset feed point. Normally you would take and put a 4 to 1 bound up at the top, and then you would put make sure you'd have some sort of current choke. Well, he did it a little different. He's got the antenna up at 50 feet at portable day. The radio is down, was underneath the shelter, and about 6 feet of coax to a 4 to 1. And from the 4 to 1, he used 300 ohm cable all the way up to the feed point. Nothing else. He says it works much better. And I'm thinking, gee, maybe you could use 450 instead of 300 ohm, but is there any difference? 300 ohm, 450, run coax all the way up, what do you think?
In general, I don't think there's a whole lot of difference. I'm actually more concerned about just inherent losses and also arcing. So sometimes the 450 stuff is a little fatter and capable of handling things a bit more the higher power with lower loss, but that's just it doesn't mean you can't, you're guaranteed lower losses depending on how you engineer it, but that's interesting what you say. I mean, that he's run 300 line unshielded 300 twin lead basically all the way up to the feed point after a 6 foot ballon dance, if I caught you right. Is that correct?
A 6 foot of coax is a 4-to-1. Nesting a 4-to-1 right out of the way up. This way you don't have that heavy ballon hanging up in the air. You just have 300 ohms to the feed point with a little plastic separator up there.
Hey, was there any magic to his length of 300 ohm coax, of twin lead?
He said no.
Okay. Well, there's your answer. I think you could use either one. You could even probably use the 600 ohm ladder line if you really wanted to, based on that assumption, with little or any concern as to how the performance of the feed system is going to be. I think that's an interesting perspective. So let's review a little bit. What he said is that by using 6 feet of coax, that's how you get out the door, or through the wall, or through the window, as it were. And then ladder line, once you're clear of the house, of the structure, up to the feed point. How delightful that is. My guess is it doesn't have to be 6 feet. It could be as long as it's necessary to get to your radio. Is that correct?
Just didn't want the 300 ohm right next to the radio and operating station. We were in the pavilion, by the way.
Right, so you're in that outside thing. So take a 4-to-1 ballon or even a 6-to-1 ballon, depending on what the antenna is, and feed it with coax, get it out away from you, and then from there, use twin lead to your dipole. And for an OCF, which is a non-resonant antenna, there's really nothing compelling you to worry much, because the magic's in the air, as it were.
Ladder line cuts down on the losses because, the impedances will vary depending on what frequency you're on, and so there will always be mismatch, and coax has more loss with mismatch.
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely. Any kind of open wire, or for those of us who've used single wire G-line, God help us all. That's a lot less loss than coax. Absolutely. That's a good point, Howie. Anybody else? Well, you doubled with Howie. What was your comment? N2OEL, K2BAR.
No, that was it. That was my question about the feed line, and that would be nice for a fixed location, but I can't see using that if you were for camping on a regular basis, because one time you might be able to get 20 feet up the trees, next time 75, and you wouldn't want to have all those pieces of 300 at all, and you sure wouldn't want to drag it on the ground. So I'm thinking that, you really don't want that heavy ballon hanging up in the air. So it sounds to me like a good for a home, fixed station. Not so great for if you're going camping with it.
Yeah. Well, it depends. If you know you have the requisite supporting elements for the wire, it's just fine. Now, I'm trying to remember, he had talked about modifying the lengths from a traditional OCF and where the feed point is at the high spot. The long loop is the low part, and the short watt length is elevated more. Or you can make it flat, but if you have to slope it, the short length is and the feed point are high. So what were the lengths he used for his non-traditional, you know, more pleasing to 15 meters kind of dipole, off-center fed dipole?
I think he changed it from the one traditional one-third feed point, which is one point that matches. Another one which is matches is the 20% point, but of course neither of those do much for 15 meters. However, he switched it to the 40% point, which gives you a little greater excursion, I think, on 20 meters. But then it matches not too bad. I don't believe it's much more than 3.5 to 1 on any of the bands, including 15 meters. We sent the charts out to this guy who did it. Boy, did he spend some time. He didn't write a computer program that did it. He figured the values out with ENIC, whatever the heck that program is, and put them into a spreadsheet. And I sent that to you, and I think it's about 8 pages. I couldn't believe it. And then he had a spreadsheet set up to color coordinate as to give you, you know, red, yellow, green, depending on what the SWR was and the conjugate match at that point. And actually, the guy did a really hard job. I think it would have been easier if he run a program, but wow. Anyway, that's what I sent you a couple weeks ago. I believe it's the 40% point.
Yeah, I think it was, now that you mentioned it. And yes, I do have those, and if anyone would like them, I'll be happy to forward them on. My email is w2ttt@awrl.net, and be happy to send them on to whoever would request them. But they were fascinating. They were absolutely fascinating. Okay. So the 40% point instead of the one-third point or whatever, that's interesting. Anybody else? Okay. All right. Any other questions, Mr. Noel?
We got to get ready for the VHF contest, so I'm going to be packing my truck. I got my two radios, one for 2 meters, one for 440, so I can have them separate. Tony's provided 220. We have a triplexer. We have a tri-band antenna whose performance specs is not really great as, for instance, the 18-foot-high DB9, but it's a manageable length of 6 or 8 feet. And, you know, when you're on a 500-foot mountain, don't matter. Back to that. This is Antoya.
Okay, I beg to disagree with your last point. But, yes, I remember Joe Reiser, W1JR, God rest his soul, used to assert with absolute, you know, emphatic passion that, you know, it after a certain point, it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. Then there are those of us who disagreed with him, and after a while, God bless him, he came around. One of my friends, Steve Castro, N2CEI, the, you know, co-owner with his wife Sandra of Down East Microwave, built a wonderful antenna, which is in its utility. They operate from K1WHS, Dave Olean's place, and Dave has a radio shack that's above his house, you know, up the hill that you can't get to in January except with a snowmobile or skis or snowshoes, and it's got a generator and all sorts of goodies in it. But on the tower, which is 100-odd feet tall, what they did was they put 4-element or 3-element Yagis stacked one above the other. I think there's 16 of them. And they're all pointed to the southwest. And so they can work everything from a point about 100 miles north of Toronto all the way down the east coast with one beam. Now, they also have a rotatable array, but for general listening on 2 meters, that's what K1WHS uses, and it's a hugely high point on a very tall tower, but